This is the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast from the Scottish FA. For those new to our podcast, Chris Sampson from Sports Marketing Scotland and myself, Michael Bockel, look to help football clubs across Scotland with some marketing guidance. Every podcast, we cover a different topic and welcome a guest or two to share their experiences. This week, we focused on working with your supporters. We were joined by Craig Hughes from the Well Society and Andy Ross from the MFC podcast to offer their advice from a supporter's point of view. We wanted to do this podcast because of a good number of our previous guests have mentioned using fans to help with club marketing efforts. On show two, we covered managing volunteers with Colin Miller from Hibernian. The term volunteer can sometimes come with connotations of regular time commitment. This doesn't always have to be the case. Asking your supporters for their opinions or expertise on a project is also an option. As we will hear from Craig, a subscription model is also becoming more common. On show 10, we were joined by Scott Gormall from Aberdeen, who discussed their own membership model, which is also worth a listen. We enjoyed recording this podcast as we had two different types of supporter on, both who promote and help their club in their own way. Andy from the MSC podcast offers his opinion on how clubs can have closer ties with fan media. As always, if you have any questions or feedback, drop us a message on Twitter or LinkedIn. Show notes are also available on the Scottish FA website. Enjoy the show.
Hello and welcome to show 17 of the Scottish Football Marketing Podcast. My name's Chris Sampson from Sports Marketing Scotland and we've got Michael Bockel from the Scottish FA.
Hello.
We are talking with quite an interesting topic and one that's probably on the rise and has been for a good few years now. We're going to touch on our thoughts on how clubs could work more closely in collaboration with their supporters and a few different ways to do that, Michael.
Yeah, it's a theme that's probably came out of a few podcasts that we've done so far, and sort of common theme is how can you, one, utilise your fan base to do more and help the club, but also they're your supporters and your fans, so they kind of know what they want, and the best way of finding out is working with them closely, asking them. So hopefully on today's show we've got two good guests that do it in slightly different ways. So
definitely, yeah, we've got a bit of a Motherwell theme on today's show. We've got Craig Hughes from the Well Society. Welcome, Craig.
How are you doing?
And Andy Ross from the MFC podcast.
Thanks for having us.
Guys, could you, let's get kicked off, could you introduce yourselves and give a bit of a background to both of those things that you do?
Yeah, I've worked for the Well Society for about 3 years. Been a really exciting time to be involved in the club. As you know, over the last couple of years I've moved into full fan ownership, so it's been exciting. I've been involved in the kind of day-to-day side of that, trying to represent the members that have got on board. We've got over 2,700 now, so trying to represent them, report back to the board, and you know, help push the fan ownership and how it's working at Motherwell. So it's been a really exciting few years, and we've seen that it's took off for Motherwell. So it's, you know, after a really, really good season last season, and a lot of positives to take with the young players coming through in the second half of the season here, it's certainly working well. So it's been definitely an exciting spell at the club.
Definitely. Well, we'll get onto that in a second. Andy, what about yourself?
I host the MSC podcast, an idea that stemmed out of an angry group chat following the resignation of Stuart McCall back in 2014. And it's an idea that's just grown to mainly podcasts, but also fan events and some charity fundraisers as well. So again, a very enjoyable time and an exciting time to be part of the kind of fan media side of things.
Definitely, yeah. Let's kick off with the Well Society then. Craig, what is the purpose of the Well Society?
The purpose originally was to safeguard the future of the club, plain and simple, really. I think a few years ago they'd seen that in Scottish football, the kind of rich benefactors just ploughing money in wasn't a long-term solution for any club. So the only way it was going to survive was for a club to, you know, be owned by its fans. We couldn't rely on just an individual putting money in. We had to do it ourselves. So it was that was the main purpose on it, just to safeguard the future for, you know, generations. So the idea was to get as many members as we could as possible, putting, you know, money at the club, pledges into the club, and owning it themselves. Also, you know, important sides of that is making sure that the fans have a say in what happens at the club, that they're represented by fans on the board, and that decisions that are made are always in the best interest of the club. So that's, you know, fairly simple, but that was the purpose of it going forward.
And how obviously, as you said, there's representation on the board.
Yep.
What is the relationship? How does it work between the club and the Well Society? Is it just a board member or is there more to it?
Yeah, well, basically we have two boards, really. It's an executive board and the Well Society board. So the Well Society board is made up of most elected board members who are elected on by the members. So basically that's where they get their say, really, to elect who they want to be represented on the board. So we've got a wide range of people on that board. So the executive board then also has two Well Society board members on there to make sure the fans, you know, voices are always heard on the board. So that's really the relationship on that side. So it's been very much because there's not a lot of, well, there isn't any top flight clubs in the UK yet that are fan-owned apart from Motherwell. So it has really much been us setting the way for it. So it's really always been a work in progress since it came into play. It's been very much working together, but that's the fundamentals of it. It's fans on the board and making sure that the fans' voice is always kind of heard and represented. So the relationship is a positive one and a working one between the club and the society.
So I was going to say, what sort of things then are taken to the board? So how does it work? People obviously have to, will raise points with Well Society, which you'll discuss at your board level, and then it goes to the board at the executive.
Yeah, we every month they have their kind of topics that are working on, how to build membership and how to kind of push it. But on top of that, we ask the members every month to set the agenda by putting forward their questions. So it might have been, it might have been something they want an explanation on in more detail, maybe about the youth development or, contracts or whatever, or it might be something as simple as a complaint they've got on match day that they just want to see addressed. So it would be kind of taken case by case, and we would report that back to the board and then, come back to the individual member where, an answer for them. And possibly if it's an idea that they want to take forward, then we would look and see if it had any merit. So that's really where they get their say and where they get the opportunity to put it forward to the board.
What then, apart from obviously the financial investment and the benefits from that, what can a fan group like Well Society offer a football club?
I think it offers fans a lot of peace of mind that they know that they're represented by supporters. I'd say that all in all as the main contact. It also offers the a member an opportunity to be involved at board level at a club. I mean, when the elections come up, if they don't feel it's done right or they don't feel they've been represented properly, they can put themselves forward. So
can anybody put themselves
anybody forward? Any member can put themselves forward for election when they come up. So that's a good opportunity. It gives an individual member a chance to really feel ownership of the club. And even if you don't want to get involved in board level, you at least know, you maybe friends with a board member or sitting near a board member, you've got access to the club and you can ask your questions and feel as if you've got a real say in the way the club's run. There's other wee kind of things we add on just to try and make the members feel more part of it. For example, we're doing the Player of the Month awards. We always select a member to come in and present it. So wee things like that just to keep the members feeling part of things.
Obviously, you said you've got over 2,700 members now. Do you struggle to keep hold of members, or is it something that when you become a member, you kind of become a member for a long time?
Yeah, it's difficult because the setup of it changed. Originally, it was that you paid a one-off fee and that was you joined, and it was just annual if you wanted to continue to contribute. And then they moved on to try and get as many members as we could on a monthly pledge so that it's more ongoing, so starting at £5. So we've found it's very gradual. We've got some that paid originally, put quite a lot in, and maybe we're trying to encourage them to continue to support. There's others that maybe set up a £5 or £10 pledge or maybe more, and they just leave it. So the main thing is I think trying to keep engaged with them, and I think the main thing is that they've seen good results on the pitch. I mean, we've seen the members' numbers swelling last year when they were getting to cup finals. It's a bit tougher when you're not, but when they can see that the right things are done, young players are coming through, they see maybe improvements around the stadium, you can say to them, look, this is where your pledges are going. That's the main reason it keeps them happy. But it's certainly sometimes hard because people are paying for their season tickets, they're paying for strips, they've got all sort of household costs and stuff. So it is tough for some people to keep it going, but we definitely do our best to keep everyone kind of on board and engaged with it.
Andy, I'm going to put you on the spot. Are you in the Well Society?
Yes, I am.
Good. I was afraid you were going to say no there and it was going to be awkward. But
although I was one of the people that I took a what was called a steel package, I think, originally. So that was the one, I think that was £300 in the first instance. Yeah. I now pay in £5 a month, which is, I guess it's a commitment on top of your season ticket and away games and such like, but it has really broken down the barriers between the suits and the supporters. I've got one of my close friends, Jason, he sits on the board. We bend his ear about things that are annoying us. He can take it back to a meeting, he can feed it back to yourself. There's no barriers between the supporters and the club. And for me, that was kind of part of the excitement of it as well. We knew we weren't going to be signing the new centre forward or dropping the goalkeeper on a Saturday, but the links are much more tangible inside Fir Park now, and that is through fan ownership.
What would you say then some of the bigger things that the Welsh Society have had an influence on within the club?
Well, I'd say if you take back the manager when Stephen Robinson was appointed, the Welsh Society was heavily involved in the interview process and the decision making. So all the big decisions are made between the board. I mean, it's, you know, you'd love to give a fan's say and a proper insight into every decision that's made, but quite simply, a club can't work like that. You vote the board members on to make those decisions on, you know, sort of on your behalf and try and gauge the feedback of the fans. So I'd say, you know, the big decisions at the club, the Welsh Society are all well informed, the Welsh Society board are well informed and well involved. And as I said, they try and be as transparent as possible with the fans, but there obviously has always limits because you can't, you know, you can't say too much, you can't give away personal stuff about players' contracts, you can't say how much the budget's for, or then you'll get, you know, so it's a difficult balance to find, but the Welsh Society is kind of heavily involved. So as it does rely on quite a bit of trust between the members and the board that they've voted on, you know, to go and represent them properly. But as I said, if they don't like the kind of decisions that are coming out, then they can look to make changes on that side. So,
in terms of the marketing support then, and moving on to that, clubs could make a bit more of their relationships with some fan groups. Are you of that opinion?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think looking just from our side, trying to generate money, I mean, generate money through the Welsh Society. We had the cup final came and we had supporters group, the Well Boys, doing a fundraiser for the display in the crowd, and they put all the money they'd made on that into the Welsh Society. So things like that, keeping the fans really engaged and involved is a big opportunity. I mean, rather just putting the hand out and saying, give us your money, you're engaging with them and you're getting them involved. Other things, just general trying to find different wee areas you can get into. I mean, recently we started an Exiles Club, which was to try and connect Well fans kind of all over the world. And we had about 50 members that came from all different backgrounds, all different stories. And we ended up, there was a story in recently, we got a Chinese guy just randomly buying shares in the club. And we got him over, and he was at last week's game as well. So stories like that, I think, start to open doors and start to get people, you know, get people interested in seeing what the club's doing. It's a wee bit different from, you know, from other clubs.
How did that all come about? Because I've seen the video, obviously. I think it was Gordon Duncan interviewed him outside.
It was totally random, to be honest. We put out a share sale, trying to encourage people to buy individual shares in the club. And I got one came through on email one day, and it was a Beijing address. And I thought, that's a bit strange. And usually if it's a foreign address, I'm going to be contacting, because usually I've got a tie to Scotland or some sort of reason. We can maybe do a wee story on it. And it turned out he had absolutely no family connection. He'd really liked the idea of fan ownership. He was over visiting Scotland. He was a commentator for mainly American football in China. And then he was actually over. So we brought him in, let him meet the manager, got a picture of the manager. And then he ended up, you know, really backing the club, being quite vocal on Twitter about it. So then he came back over. So we decided to get a wee interview with him. But it was a totally random story that I've just came across and liked the idea of fan ownership. So I thought it was quite a unique. Usually we get guys that, you know, it's just because their dad was Scottish or something along those lines of why he spoke, but this was a totally out of the blue one that was just encouraged by fan ownership.
And he probably, he probably follows the club as well, isn't it? His favourite player's Alan Campbell, am I right thinking?
Honestly, we thought he'll maybe know a wee bit about Motherwell. Since then he's probably watched a couple of games, but he was talking to us in the office and he said, oh, Clyde told us when Clyde moved to Broadwood and Cumbernauld. I didn't even know that. So it was unbelievable how much that guy's bought into it. And it makes you think about how many other people could be kind of touched by the unique story that Motherwell has. And I'm sure other clubs, you know, if they went that route, you know, the likes of Hearts with good stories to share, that would get loads of other fans involved.
I was going to say the kind of amazing story in terms of picking that up for the club and then being able to tell that from their perspective as well, in a bit of a like a content that they can use going out.
Aye, definitely. It's, as I said, you see so much kind of negative stories quickly come out. So it's sometimes good these wee unique ones, and you know there's plenty that have come out from Motherwell. We even had a week later with a boy that was mascot that pulled his dad out. His dad was in a car accident. He ran out and pulled him out and saved his dad. So wee stories like that, I think, really, although it might not catch massive attendances, it's good stories that clubs like, you know, about clubs like Motherwell and the community feel, yeah, really, and really feel making fans feel involved in it.
I must say, I met the boy from Beijing after the St Johnston game, and I was just delighted we won the game 3-0, but he was over the moon. It was the best game he had ever seen. It was, Fir Park was the, it was his, oh, he was, oh, the buzz he had got from a home 3-0 victory over St Johnston was quite something. It was amazing.
Oh, he said in his interview as well, he said, he was talking about commentating the Super Bowl, and he said, I've been at the MetLife Stadium. He goes, but the Fir Park is special. And I looked around, are you sure?
I mean, you've got that to tell other fans now as well.
So you've got a testimonial. He's obviously raised money through, as you said, you've got your members paying in, under your paying in, on a monthly basis. And now a thing that we find, and especially at lower level, is clubs are always looking to how can they generate more revenue. And you do additional fundraising events on top of your membership. Can you give us some examples of...
Yeah, the main one was we done a share sale. So basically, the amount of shares that that we had in Motherwell was 76%. They only needed 51, obviously, to keep ownership. So they decided to do a share sale to fans that want to buy individual shares. So although we recognise that members are a shareholding group, we gave them the opportunity to buy shares, and that raised, I think off the top of my head, that raised about 60 grand for the club. So other wee events we have, like, kind of auctions. We ask fans if they've got any memorabilia they want to hand in that they want to put out for auction. We do that. We've done a couple of events with, you know, the likes of podcast guys to try and generate as much money as we can for the club. So we think always looking at wee things that we can do, and if it puts a little bit of extra money into the club, then it's great.
I'm right thinking last year or the year before, things like golf days and various things like that. Yeah.
We also had the former players get involved, and they've done a kind of nostalgia night as well, so inviting the former players along and doing that. So just, I mean, wee events like that, and it's not even just about the money it raises, it's the engagement that it promotes as well. That's really important.
Do you think it helps that the club are so kind of progressive in their approach to things like this now as well?
I think so, aye, definitely. The club's so quite open with the fans, and they're willing to get involved. And it was difficult, it's had its difficult moments, you know, getting the fan ownership idea going. I think now that fans see that this is the way the club's going, this is the future. I mean, we had last year all the players joined as well, so that's a big thing, as it shows everybody's kind of in it together. So I think that those kind of messages that come out from the club tell people that, you know, that's the way it's going to go, and the values of the club and the community feel, and it all makes a difference and encourages people to get on board.
What then if more clubs are going down this route, or more clubs are engaging their supporters to help in the background or on various activities? What would the lessons that you have learned in your time at the Welsh Society, what would any sort of advice or things to watch out for?
The advice I'd say when they're going the fan ownership route is to, you know, I said about how it started off as a, you know, one-off fee. I would just have that monthly payment that's affordable, giving people the opportunity. If it's £5 a month you can afford, you know, then stick with that. It's been a wee bit difficult because we've had to change the system a wee bit. But just, I would say if fan ownership is the route that a club wants to go, then I'd just encourage making it easy for people to join, encourage people to come on board, and on a board level, make sure the fans are well represented. I think a good thing for us now is basically the board's quite diverse and made out of groups from all over the stadium. So I think that's a big point of it. If they see just one group and they think they don't really represent me on the board, then I think that can put people off. So I think that would be the main thing I would say. Look to get, you know, young people involved, look to get women involved, look to get, you know, kids, look to get people who sit in every stand involved, so that you get a proper representation of the fans.
And how do you communicate with your members?
We put out a weekly newsletter to just keep everybody, you know, in the loop, what's happened, ask them to come forward with anything, any questions they've got. That's the main focus. We also obviously use social media, and I think it's mainly, you know, going in the back of the club's messaging, making it sort of an open door policy that they can phone, that they can come in the office anytime, that they can submit questions anytime. So that's the main thing. So you'll get the vast majority of members don't actually, you know, want to talk to you all the time. They're quite happy. If the club's running well, they're quite happy. But we just make sure the doors are open for the communication between ourselves and the fans and the members.
Do you find, obviously you mentioned the newsletter there, what sort of content would you put out on a weekly basis?
It really depends how the week's going. It could be, you know, the likes a few weeks ago when there was a wee bit of issue with the Kilmarnock tickets, we had to put out a proper statement that sort of, you know, explained to our members the process and how we felt and how we'd, you know, represent the fans. There's other weeks when it's maybe a prize draw that we're doing that we want people to come and sign up for. So it really varies. There's others, you know, that are quite quiet. So it's it just depends really what's going on. It could be inviting them to a meeting coming up or whatever. So it's quite varied, but we try and, you know, keep it fairly consistent. They're getting the news stories and they're getting, you know, an opportunity. And it's always reminding them, if you get any questions, come back to us, you know.
Obviously, from that perspective, then you've already got that kind of active member base that's signed up, and then social's pretty big for the club, and the club are pretty well followed, I think, online anyway. Yeah. For clubs that maybe aren't so big, is there anything that you do offline at all?
I would say for clubs that maybe aren't so big, there's always opportunities. I think for a club that's not so big, I think you've got more of an opportunity to be face to face and to invite them in for more face to face meetings. When it's a bigger club and you'll find that people don't really have that sort of engagement. It has to be more online. So I'd say for a smaller club, you're maybe looking at, you know, more hands on deck and more face to face meetings, I would say.
Cool. Let's move on to you, Andy, and MFC Podcast. You've already quickly mentioned where the idea came from, but just take us through it again and why you wanted to start it.
I don't even know if we wanted to start it to begin with, to be perfectly honest. We had a group chat, as many groups of mates do, I guess, and we were discussing Stuart McCall leaving the club, and we were very varied in our opinions, and it was getting a bit heated, and there was phone calls going on in the background and everything else. I said, well, I had been involved with the By the Minute Sport, doing the text kind of commentaries and things like that, just in between work shifts, and I quite enjoyed doing it. And then did a couple of the podcasts as well, just on a regular basis, really. So I contacted Roddy from By the Minute Sport and basically asked him how he did it. And it was as simple as he used his mobile phone, his iPad, and Skype, and they just kind of recorded each individual parts and put them together. So myself, Jason, and James, we decided we were going to do this, and we did it about half an hour later. We sat down and recorded our first podcast, and the response was quite positive. We were just kind of promoting it on our own Facebook pages, and then it kind of stemmed to a Twitter page and then the website, and it was just an idea that kind of grew and grew and grew. And ever since the first one, I've enjoyed doing it, and it's something I'm now very, very passionate about.
I think you meant, was it 2014 you mentioned?
Yeah.
It's kind of ahead of the curve in terms of podcasts, isn't it? And everybody's got a podcast these days. How's the relationship between the podcast and the club then developed over time? Obviously, back then, when you were new, maybe just starting out. Who made the first move?
It was certainly us that made the first move. Maybe it was quite early, though. I think it maybe only been about 5 or 6 podcasts in. We tested the water, and we knew a few former players from social events and things like that. So I think we had Kevin Twaddle, former player, on. He was launching a book at that time, I'm pretty sure. So he was more than willing to obviously do the podcast. Following that, we had the chairman at the time, Brian McCafferty, who was heading up the Well Society. And then it stemmed to Alan Burrows. And then we just tested that a wee bit more, and we would ask for a player, and before the cup final there with the manager. It's been incredible how much it's grown, but they're so open to questions. They don't always say yes, don't get me wrong, but the door's always open to at least ask the question. Whether we get a positive response or not depends on how results are going, depends on other demands on the guys, but certainly they've been very, very good with us.
And how much do you use things like the MFC podcast to get your message across?
I've actually been on it a couple of times, so I think it's a good thing. I think it's, and you know, Jason Jay that's on the, he's on the on the podcast, and he's obviously on the Welsh City board, so I think we use it quite positively, but at the same time, not trying to distract from what the guys are doing. You know, they're, they want to give fans their opinion of the matches, and you know, being partial on that side. So we have used it, and we are, you know, worked quite closely with the podcast guys in the past.
Would you want to see? I mean, a lot of clubs are kind of going in this space now. I think a few of them in the Scottish Premiership already have them. Would you want to see Motherwell have their own official podcast? And would you be a bit upset about that? Or would you rather see a club podcast maybe more suited to fan groups like yourselves?
I'm not sure it would be good for our numbers, certainly. But no, there's a lot of talented guys in it for Park. I don't know whether they'd have the time to do it. Certainly, from my point of view, I always want to be kind of harsh but fair when it comes to Motherwell. Don't get me wrong, it's rubbish. I'm quite happy to say it's rubbish, yeah. But I do kind of extend you the positives quite a lot as well. And I don't know whether that's maybe having a good relationship with the likes of Craig, with Alan Burrows, Grant Russell. The people I've grown very close to, so you don't want to be too harsh because it will come back to bite you inevitably, I guess. But by the same time, you've got to kind of call it as you see it. So. Yeah, I wouldn't be adverse to. I'm sure Motherwell would do it very well, but I'm quite happy having ownership of that market at the moment.
Do you think more clubs, because as you touched on there, Chris, there is more clubs doing it. I think Hibs have got their own, and they do a lot of post-match on match day.
Rangers might have one as well.
I mean, one of the biggest Scottish football podcasts, and it's Heart and Hand, and you've got Celtic, I've got loads. And would you? Do you think more clubs should encourage and embrace fan media and have greater relationships with their podcasts?
Yeah, I very much do. I think it also helps just having a relationship with your supporters in difficult times. You go out and the bread and butter is obviously the Saturday, isn't it? But when you're losing and you've got a relationship and a bond between supporters and club, it helps through the difficult times. I'm sure you'll agree when results weren't very good at the start of the season, there was still that kind of closeness and togetherness because the club had done a lot of work getting the guys, building up their profiles through things like the podcast, through the tremendous work they do in the social media side of things. And you feel that you can relate to the players, you feel like you almost know them without knowing them, as silly as that sounds.
Yeah, definitely.
So while you're maybe being critical of the performances, you know it's not for the want of trying. You know there's a good core of people there, whether that be on the pitch or behind the scenes, desperate for the club to do the very best they can. And I think it must just make life so much easier. Don't get me wrong, I know from speaking to them at times, it's not nice when you're losing and you're being criticised in social media. But I think it would be a lot worse, and I've seen it a lot worse, without things like the work Motherwell do, the things that ourselves do and the society does.
Yeah, I think if we're talking about that shift then towards more fan media platforms rather than maybe the traditional media outlets as well, what do you see as some of the positives and negatives of that?
The positives is, for a fan of a smaller club, is increased coverage. Yeah. I think quite a lot of us that don't support the so-called big two, they feel maybe a bit left out and a wee bit kind of undercovered in certain degrees. We're getting grown a bit sick of seeing captions of photographs with the wrong names or the wrong spellings, and it grates on you as a fan of a smaller club. I think there's a lot of talented supporters out there as well that are getting their content out there, and they've got a platform to do so, whereas there was maybe obstacles beforehand when you couldn't just sit down one night and decide you wanted to start a podcast. It is very, very simple to do so now. The negative side, maybe just the volume that's come out in the last year or so, and I've got to be careful what I say, obviously, because I'm part of the problem, perhaps, but there is a lot coming out at the same time, and maybe that just kind of convolutes the message somewhat. But I think as long as talented people are doing good things, then it will get the coverage of Scottish football in the right direction.
Yeah, I mean, we've used them for positive, or tried to use them for positive in the past here, and obviously I've come in, my role's in digital, whereas I work alongside comms guys who deal with, and I've said this before, I hate using the term traditional sort of journalists, but we've done stuff in the past where we've invited different podcasts on and took them into a box in Hampden and tried to do, it was a UEFA Nations League explainer to try, at the very start when nobody knew what the Nations League was, but invited guys from various sort of fan podcasts that were more generic Scottish football and guys that are, have blogs and websites and got them in and tried to have that open conversation where one, yep, we'll take you through and try to impart as much knowledge and on the Nations League as possible and help obviously get across some of the messages that we want to get across across the Nations, about the Nations League, but also that opportunity to ask about some other stuff as well and help build those relationships. So for when, as sometimes it happens with Scotland, things do go a bit negative, is that, look, we know people are going to be critical and I wouldn't expect any other way, because if you're not being critical, you're not being true to what your podcast is, but it might not be as harsh on certain areas and they've got that knowledge and understanding of what's actually happening that helps get across the reasons why perhaps something's not working, or on the other side, when things are going good, you've got the messages as they're going across and they're helping hype up that feel-good factor. So I'm a big advocate of it. I think as a organisation, we probably need to do more. As I said, that night with when we did the Nations League was now a long time ago, it was a year ago sort of thing we did that, and there's probably more opportunities we can do with that. And it's, as you said, there's probably clubs going on fan media or clubs hosting these sort of things with fan groups and different, if clubs can identify who, some of the bigger clubs especially, who their sort of main media or bloggers, podcasters are, and bring them in and make them feel part of something, then it'll help, as you said, with get those messages. But when times are tougher, there's still that community and closeness together.
It's a brilliant point, because there's also a willingness there as well. Perhaps the more hard-nosed sports journalists that have been in the job many years aren't so interested in learning about a new tournament or a new format, whereas these guys, to be invited along to a place like Hampden Park and be spoken to as if they matter, that's a great thing, and it engages them further down the line, or all the way down the line, actually.
Yeah. I think it's full honesty side as well. I think fans want to see honesty, and I think fan media groups can offer that. You know, if you watch a bad game, you don't want somebody telling you all the positives that didn't exist, you know. And I'm not saying that it's lies, but I don't think a club can properly do a podcast that appeals to fans, because they can't. You can't be critical of, you know, the guys you're working with, the players you're working with, but when you're kind of on the kinda outside of the club, when you can give an honest opinion without being scathing or critical and still have a bit of knowledge, I think that's so important to it. And I think clubs recognise that, that when you listen to these fans, I mean, that there's not an agenda behind them, it's supporters like yourselves that actually go through the same emotions with you, and maybe you listen to a podcast that's recorded straight after a game, it's a wee bit emotional, and you listen the next day and it's more measured, or the next week or whenever they do it. So that more measured. So I think that's the huge appeal that a club can't really offer, that a fan. So I think that's a huge, huge positive.
I think you've got a good point there, because, I mean, we've done a few Scotland national team podcasts over the last couple of years, and as previews to games, and we've not very much. We tried one with a reaction. I think it was after the Scotland Canada game. So that was it was a 1-1 at Easter Road, and wasn't a great performance. And as you said, you've probably a million things you could say, but being the official podcast, you don't want them to say it. You don't want your guests to say them, even though they're meant to be neutral and independent, which we try to get on. Where I would say, if clubs are going down the line of doing official podcasts, is what can you offer that a normal non-official podcast can do? It's the access, one, that you've got. It's the stories that you can probably tell within that, and that's what we kind of evolved ours in the end to. Be a lot more, we've got the players in. Not many podcasts get the players in and find out more about them. Okay, have a bit of fun with them as well and show the personalities. And that was the angle that we went down. We've not done one really since Nations League, but just the way fixtures have worked out and timings. And it's, if we do revisit the podcast, it's again, what else can we do that doesn't, not that it's, we're looking to not explore opinions and thoughts, because you want to hear thoughts and opinions on games, but you want It's not that sort of going down the line where you can get on a sports sound or you can get on a terrace or whoever else is going to be talking about the game and in a certain angle. Is what is that different sort of part of content that fans want to hear, and giving them feeling that they're part of something and getting that sort of inside scoop, if you like.
I think even this podcast is an example of that. Obviously, I'm not a Scottish FA employee, and it's kind of like a fan, like on the inside, almost like getting an inside scoop on talking about Scottish football marketing and all the aspects of it. Like, I think it's, and like you say, coming to Hampden as probably the groups that you invited previously, like getting to come here is still like wow for me, and it's just a kind of amazing insight and something that, like, I think is wholly positive.
I think it goes back then, that wow factor, and you're right. I mean, I think because I've worked here a little while now, coming into Hampden, the novelty's worn off, but your football stadium is a draw massively to people, and to come in, and if you're wanting to work with your support, people still love walking into to the ground that they of the team that they support, and that, oh, I'm actually not in the stand where I normally am, and going through the turnstiles, I'm actually going in the front door and I'm getting to see what it's like inside, and that's always going to have that sort of buzz to a lot of fans. And yeah, you're not there to take advantage, but there's things that you can offer fans that make them feel part of what the club is, and whether it's media, fan media, part being a member of a society and subsequently working your way onto a board or whatever. There's a million different things that can be done. It's just how you set up it and make the most of your support and what you can offer back to them.
I was just going to touch on that. Andy, what opportunities have kind of arisen from yourselves having the podcast?
We've done various other bits of media work, kind of myself and Jason in particular. There was also at the start of the year a brilliant opportunity to play at the Star Sixes at Hampden and scored against England, may I add, as well. So that was an incredible experience, changing in the Scotland dressing room and then going out to a Hampden which had about seven... Hampden, Hydro, with about seven people, including my youngest, my young daughter as well. So that was really special. We hosted a 25 Greatest Post-War Motherwell Players night and did a subsequent book alongside it as well. And that was just, you're contacting people that you absolutely idolise and they're getting involved in this and are invested in it. These things are just really, really special. And I think even recently the sleep out that we hosted at Fir Park, again, that was a different view of the stadium, certainly. There were some bleak moments at 3-4 o'clock in the morning, but very, very rewarding. And it's lovely to get positive coverage for stuff that we work really hard at. When it comes off and it's a success, it's really, really pleasing.
What more would you like to do with the podcast?
This is the question that I really had to think about. First and foremost, I would like to continue as long as we possibly could. We've nearly had 5 years at it. I think we all still enjoy it. We still record religiously every week. And
it's an incredible achievement to go 5 years, like, definitely.
Yeah, and as I say, I think there's maybe been a few points where we've thought it could have run its course, but then there'll be something that reminds us why we do it. And I think the group of friends and the contacts we've made from doing it are... It's a really special thing. So first and foremost, continue to do it. But I think as a fan-owned club, it's great to see a few vloggers appearing and a few other Motherwell podcasts appearing as well, because we've all got a say about the club we love, and let's keep going and let's keep moving it in the right direction. I think Scottish football fans, especially in the last year, have kind of fought back. They're a bit fed up of being looked down upon, because we love our game and there's so many positives to extenuate, and I believe that it's the job of the fan media to really drive that.
Great. I think that's a good point to end that part on. Guys, thanks very much for joining us. We'll wrap up the podcast on our usual sort of feature where myself and Chris will go tell a couple of things that we've spotted recently that we like. So, Chris?
Definitely. I've got a few examples this week. So, first one is, a new podcast that I've just spotted recently. It's called In Sport Pod. I'm going to describe it to our listeners as almost an English version of us, but it's not really. They're not focusing just on football. So they have some, I think they're three episodes in. They've had some interesting guests on so far, including head of media at the PDC Darts Corporation, and then the creator of Bristol City's Goal Gifts as well, which obviously went down pretty well on Twitter previously. So that's In Sport Pod, hosted by a couple of guys down south. And then my second one, it's a bit fan media-ish. It's at Made by Frankie on Twitter, who's an illustrator. And I think she's been doing some really cool, like, kind of simplistic posters of all the Scottish Premiership clubs, kind of taking unique aspects of them and just creating something pretty cool from that. So
yeah, illustrators, there's a lot of good ones on Twitter at the moment in time. I know Motherwell have used illustrators. I've got a lot of sort of great designs from an illustration point of view. There's guys like Matt Dallinson does a lot of good work, and especially within Scotland, but even beyond. Football art is quite a big thing, and as I said, as Motherwell have shown, it can be used in the right ways as well, whether it's programme covers or on social, etc. So yeah, no, a lot of good work out there. My two, slightly different. I'll go football one first. I think one of the last podcasts I mentioned an example of where sponsors have worked well with the club, and it's no different with Liverpool and a cybersecurity company called NordVPN. Now you'll be wondering, how do you tie in cybersecurity with Liverpool or football in general? And they did quite a good, it was a bit of video content. They had a couple of players involved, and it was a bit of a wind up with Andy Robertson and Rian Brewster, and it was one other player that I can't remember, but they were they stitched up Rian Brewster with a security guy at Liverpool, and they tied it in, so there was a security element there. But it's a good bit of video content, and off the back of it, the sponsor they promoted the offer for their partner. So yeah, great. We got people watched the video, got bought into it, and then they were like, all right, oh, actually, and there's an offer there. How many they got off the back of it, who knows? But I thought it was a good example of a sponsor tied in with a club and making it relevant.
Obviously, Andy Robertson's involved as well, who's always worth a watch on anything.
Yeah, he seems to be involved in a lot of Liverpool stuff.
I think
stuff.
He's in every single one of the videos, basically. Yeah.
And the other one I've got is a bit of a geeky, nerdy one, if you like. It's a beginner's guide to SEO, search engine optimization. Moz, who are started off as an SEO company and website, have just relaunched and updated their beginner's guide to SEO. So anybody that's heard the term or wants to try and rank higher in Google, I'd go and give it a look. It's free. I started my digital career in specialising in SEO, and it can be a lot to take in, but that guide's very good for giving you a starting point. And especially for smaller clubs where you're trying to sell, for example, meeting space or events, or you want to be able to rank as high as you can in Google. With football, it can be a competitive space, especially if you're competing against non-football things for in your community. So yeah, look, take a look and you might learn a thing or two.
Super nerdy.
It is.
Craig and Andy, where can people find you guys if they wanted to afterwards?
Well, the website, all the information on there is thewelshsociety.co.uk or at the Welsh Society is where you'll get us on Twitter.
Perfect. Andy?
For the podcast, it's MFC Podcast 86.
Perfect. Thanks very much again for coming on, guys.
No problem.
We'll
Thank
see you again next time.